I think we have about 4 minutes. So I think the enforcement material is a little more important. I'm just going to provide an annual update of important tax developments that are likely to be of interest to our funds clients. I've done this for the last couple of years, and people thought it was useful. Please don't hesitate in this segment to ask any questions during the presentation. I'm happy to be interrupted. This is a slide. Just a list of things we'll cover. First topic is kind of mundane. It's the outlook for tax rates, but obviously very important. There's a historic level of uncertainty in the near term about what tax rates are going to be, especially for fund managers with the legislation on carried interest in limbo. The uncertainty makes tax planning obviously extremely difficult and risky. We only know really one thing at this point in terms of tax rate changes, that individuals will face a significant tax rate increase in 2013 as a result of the changes in the Medicare tax and effectively an increase of 3.8% tax on investment income, including capital gains, interest, and dividends, and assuming the repeal of the Bush tax cuts, at least an 8.8% increase in effective tax rates, which is a major change in tax rates around 2013. One thing that I think hearing the campaign rhetoric about the repeal of the health care bill, apparently, based on our tax policy experts, the repeal of the Medicare tax is almost an impossibility, especially before the next presidential election. And even after that election, it's hard to see how that would actually come about. So there's going to be at least a 3.8% tax increase in 2013. We don't know what tax rates are going to be for 2011, even though we're approaching the end of 2010, or the fate of the carried interest legislation. We have a significant tax policy practice at Akin Gump. It's actually kind of unique in its scope. And I talk to these guys all the time. And I was going to summarize some of the things I've learned for them. Some of their insights are surprising, and I thought you guys might be interested. So how is this all going to play out in terms of what tax rates are going to be like, or what are the tax rates going to be in 2011? There's two opportunities to address the uncertainty in Congress. There's going to be a lame duck session of Congress after the election, which can meet into early January. And then there's going to be a new Congress convened in January based on election results. In terms of the lame duck session, tax rate legislation will all depend on the Senate. All tax bills will start in the Senate. And there are two basic scenarios that could happen here, and this is irrespective of what the results of the election are. The Republicans are going to stand firm on extending the Bush tax cuts for at least 1 year to wealthy individuals or people who have over $250,000 of income. The question is whether the Senate Democrats are going to capitulate to that view, to at least a 1 year full extension of the Bush tax cuts. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is the Democrats just can't get there in the Senate, that they're adamant about the position on increasing taxes on the wealthy. And in that case, I guess our prognostication is that there's going to be deadlock. And that's hard to believe that we're going to end up on December 31st not knowing the tax rates for 2011, but it's a significant possibility. If, in fact, the Senate does pass a tax bill that extends the Bush tax cuts for 1 year, no matter what President Obama has said on the campaign trail or in his statements, he would not veto that bill. At least I was been assured to that fact. If there is a deadlock, it all starts over again in January in the new Congress. And despite whatever the election results are in the Senate, and assuming the Republicans take the House, which is very likely, we end up with much the same dynamics. The Democrats in the Senate will have to capitulate to a one-year extension of the full Bush tax cuts. And if they do that, Obama will not veto it. Handicapping the outcomes, this is the more important part, and this is surprising to me. Our policy experts think there's at least a 50% chance of deadlock, not only in the lame duck session, but in the new Congress in January. And we'll have the biggest tax increase in American history in the middle of an economic downturn. I mean, I'm shocked at that, but gone through the scenarios, and it sounds logical. A 50% a chance of finger-pointing, hatred, stock market disaster, economic disaster, And a 50% chance that the one-year extension of the Bush tax cuts will occur. Some of this is going to depend on who the Senate Majority Leader is. It looks like Senator Reid is going to be out likely, even if he wins his election in Nevada. But another surprising point, that no matter what scenarios you play out, there's very little chance where the middle tax class tax cuts will be extended, but the tax cut on the wealthy will not be extended. And that's the dynamics of the Republicans' view and the weakness of the likely weakness of the Democrats. Now, how does this all impact the carried interest legislation? The only chance that the carried interest legislation would pass would be if the lame duck session of Congress passes the full one-year extension of the Bush tax cuts, in which case it's possible that the carried interest legislation could be thrown into a larger tax bill. That tax bill will not be paid for in terms of offsets, but they could throw in the carried interest legislation as kind of a compromise with the Democrats. We don't think this is very likely, and we lobby this issue, and other lobbyists have been consulted. There's very little chance, maybe 20% chance, that something like that could happen. And if there's no carried interest legislation in the lame duck session, it's basically 0% chance in the new Congress. Even if the House did not turn to the Republicans, the Senate composition is going to change sufficiently that it would be almost impossible to pass that legislation. So another sobering thought, assuming the deadlock occurs in the lame duck session, we may not know what the tax rates are for 2011 until March of 2011. And these are major tax increases, and everyone knows the scope of them. So why does this all matter other than purring interest and, you know, fun to think about? Well, us guys who do tax planning, we think about this stuff for you. And when we know the tax rates are going to go up this, significant levels, we want to trigger gains with all sorts of interesting transactions. We want to defer income sometimes or accelerate it, depending on which way the rates are going to go. From the carried interest perspective, if that legislation ever passed, we have transactions that can trigger unrealized gains that go beneath the carry, or actually the carried interest value itself. So we can trigger gains at the fund level or at the manager level to get the benefit of lower tax rates. We can even accelerate grandfather deferred compensation for people who think that that's beneficial. These are complicated transactions. They take quite a while to implement, but it's hard to do anything with this much uncertainty. So if the lame duck session does come through here and does extend the Bush tax cuts, we will not have, if it doesn't come through, we won't not have much time, and we'd have to make a bet about what the future Congress is going to do if we want to do any effective tax planning. There's a lot of money at stake here. There's likely to be a lot of end-of-year hand-wringing. Second topic, it's totally separate, new legislation that is important to fund managers, and just a brief overview of it. It's an extremely important change in the tax reporting rules, which impact to some degree every fund. The legislation was enacted last March as part of the Hiring Incentives to Restore Employment Act of 2010, which didn't do much to restore hiring. And it's called FATCA, which stands for the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. It's a wholesale change in U.S. tax reporting regime. And you can thank a few thousand individuals who opened up secret Swiss bank accounts at UBS for this legislation. Our political system clearly is reactionary. That is the clear impetus of this legislation. The law is designed to identify whether any of your investors in your funds and other financial institutions people who hold accounts in financial institutions are U.S. people trying to hide their money without paying their taxes. And it applies to funds and accounts and financial institutions, and there's a lot of detail to it. The effective date is January 2013, but it's so complicated and so burdensome, parts of it could get pushed off, but the compliance burden is going to be significant. So this FATCA is a very punitive regime. It's designed to make you comply and not to make you pay extra tax or raise money for the government. The taxation is so punitive, it's supposed to force you to actually be the government's arm to sniff out U.S. investors up the chain of ownership. The law imposes a 30% withholding tax on all U.S. source payments to a foreign fund. And that includes dividends and interest. It includes gross gains realized on sales of securities that throw off U.S. source interest or dividends, so any U.S. securities, unless the fund that receives these payments enters into an agreement with the IRS. And this is not your ordinary agreement. This is a very detailed agreement that requires the fund to take lots of steps to determine U.S. ownership up the chain. You are basically being deputized by the IRS as an enforcement tool to identify UBS-type investors or account holders. The rules apply to foreign funds, not to U.S. funds, but U.S. funds care, because when they make payments to foreign funds, they have to make sure the foreign fund has entered into one of these agreements, or they have to make the withholding. The law raises all sorts of difficult compliance and confidentiality issues. The IRS offered some relief in the form of a notice a few weeks ago, basically trying to help funds that are worried about confidentiality issues. So if one fund pays another fund a payment under this regime and that other fund has entered into an agreement with the IRS, the information of that fund's investors doesn't have to go to the first payor fund. They also made it a little bit easier to document the non-U.S. status of a particular individual investor in the fund without having to provide a W-8 form, which is viewed as burdensome by many foreign individual investors. But these are very complicated rules and lots of presumptions that may be very difficult to apply. When you sit back and think about this legislation, it is probably the most extraterritorial piece of legislation you can imagine. Basically, any foreign financial institution, any foreign fund, any foreign account that receives a U.S. source payment, including sale of a U.S. security, is subject to this withholding tax unless it enters into a comprehensive regime with the IRS. So this is basically every foreign entity in the world receiving payments on U.S. securities. What's going to happen here? Nobody really knows for sure how the market's going to react. We assume that there's going to be many fewer recipients of these type of payments, so that foreigners will kind of feed through many fewer intermediaries. I mean, people have speculated a flight from U.S. securities, actually, making them less attractive, which is kind of interesting when we're trying to attract capital. This is my first reaction to this. Why not set up a fund that does not hold U.S. securities at all? There's plenty of markets in the world. It doesn't apply if your fund trades emerging market securities. It doesn't apply if you have debt from issuers in foreign countries. You can avoid this rule altogether. And U.S. people can actually avoid paying their taxes by secretly hiding their money in a fund that doesn't have any U.S. securities. So it sounds like it's going to move things, but I know I'm pressed for time here. I'll just kind of touch on a couple more points, and then we can go drink. I think it would be interesting. I talked about last year about the chance for enhanced audit activity by the IRS and hedge funds and private equity funds. We definitely have seen a significant uptick in audit activity of especially our hedge fund clients. And these audits have increased in number and also in scope and the intensity. There's a relatively new hedge fund task force that has basically educated itself at the IRS on hedge fund issues. And they are serious. It's interesting that their focus is mostly on the offshore funds, and less so on domestic funds and their issues for their domestic investors, which includes deductibility of fees or wash sales or tax accounting for derivatives. They're very focused on whether foreign funds are engaged in business, like lending or dealing. They are very interested in derivative transactions entered into by funds, notional principal contracts to enhance dividend yields, and also securities lending transactions. They're also, not surprisingly, interested to see whether you have U.S. individuals who are in your foreign funds who may be avoiding tax and whether you are, as a manager, are complicit in that. So those are clear, direct questions. We're also seeing actually audits of portfolio companies owned by funds, including blocker companies and other smaller type of portfolio investments where they've asserted random issues like accumulative earnings tax. They're looking at tax accounting. They're looking at all sorts of tax compliance issues. So this is something to watch. It's clearly a trend, and it's likely to increase. And I'll skip the next dividend enhancement, and which there wasn't some new legislation on, which if anyone wants to know more about, there's some interesting subtle aspects of it that may not be apparent. And to report to you on some manager compensation issues, last year at this conference, we reported that there was a major push by some pension funds, including the Utah Pension Fund, and a tax promoter to kind of change compensation of hedge funds to multi-year carries with clawback with the use of options instead of carried interest in order to align investor interest with the manager. So there's a multi-year look at performance, and also to avoid the need for tax distributions on carried interest for realized gains during a multi-year reporting period, but also to achieve for the manager up to a 20-year deferral benefit, which in part defeats specific legislation that was designed to prevent hedge funds from deferring their fee, hedge fund managers for deferring their fees for many years offshore. Interesting developments there. There have been no transactions to our knowledge, even though there's been major activity, efforts to push this. The promoter tried to get a ruling from the IRS and has failed. They decided not to rule on this. And so we have seen managers enter into multi-year incentive compensation arrangements, but we have not seen it in the form of more of that more aggressive option approach.